Hare Krishna.
So welcome all of you to the Sunday Feast program. So today we'll be discussing from the 6th canto, 18th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Diti vows to kill Indra. So we'll try to discuss something from this pastime. We'll read some sections from the Bhagavat and we will try to see what lessons we can learn from this very wonderful, amazing pastime. So now, this is a story of Kashyap and Diti. Now, why do we need to study and discuss the pastimes or the lives of certain people who are mentioned in the Bhagavad? So, as we know that Kashyap is a very, very wonderful devotee of the Lord, personally. And he's the son of Marichi. As you know that Brahma has 6 Manas Putras. Now he's Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu. And Marichi's son is Kashyap. And Kashyap married the 13 daughters of Daksha. And the two principal wives of Kashyap is Diti and Aditi. And as you know that Aditi is the wife of all the demigods, Adityas, they became Adityas. And Diti gave birth to the demons, Daityas, Danavs. So it's very wonderful that he is the progenitor, one of the father of mankind. And a great devotee, and his name has been mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's a great soul. So by discussing his charitra and his leelas, pastimes, we can actually learn very wonderful lessons, spiritual lessons from his life. So, the Shukdev Goswami is explaining to Parikshit, and he's explaining the genealogy, the descendants. And this verse comes in the Bhagavatam, it's explained. Shukdev Goswami is speaking to Parikshit, he says, the 49 Marut demigods were also born from the womb of Diti. None of them had sons. Although they were born of Diti, King Indra gave them a position as demigods. So after hearing this statement of Shukdev Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj was very astonished. So he says, Katham ta asuram bhavam, apo yodpattikam guru indrena prapita satmyam kimtat sadhu kritam hitai. So Parikshit Maharaj is inquiring, my dear Lord Shukdev Goswami, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been possessed with a demoniac mentality. So why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? And did they perform any rituals or pious activities? So his question is that how come, because generally the demons are born from Diti. So how come these Maruts who were born from Diti, they should have been demons? Because they are bodies of demoniac, bodies demoniac, they should have been demons. So how come they became demigods? So did they follow some kind of rituals or what process did they undergo and why did Indra want to kill them? So what is the pastime? What is the Leela? So this Leela begins like that when Shukdev Goswami starts narrating. So it's a very interesting pastime. In this pastime, we can understand wonderful things as to what is the powerful process which can convert, which can nullify the effects of sinful activities and previous past conditionings of probably birth or past karma, and the process of devotional service can be understood here. So it gives us, this pastime will give us a great hope actually on the process that we are following, because the process which he followed, Diti followed, was the process of devotional service. So, the pastime begins. The story goes that Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were the two sons of Diti. And both of them were killed by Lord Vishnu. Because Indra had summoned Vishnu and they had conspired to kill him. So both of them were dead. So the mother of Hiranyakashipu, that is Diti, she became very upset and she wanted to take revenge. So she was thinking in her mind that this Indra has conspired to kill my two sons, the two brothers. So I must do something about it. I will only rest in peace if this Indra is killed. So she says like this. Indra considers his body eternal, and thus he has become unrestrained. I therefore wish to have a son who can remove Indra's madness. Let me adopt some means to help me in this. So she's thinking how to take revenge. Okay, now she's the wife of a great personality like Kashyap, but she's having this vengeful attitude. And she's looking for a means to take revenge from Indra. Now Indra is her co-wife's son. That means Kashyap's own son actually. So now she's plotting, she's trying to find out a way how she can fulfill her desire. So she says, Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, and by means of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Indra is cruel, hard-hearted and sinful. When will I, having killed him, rest with a peaceful mind? So she's seeing that Indra is having all bad qualities. She's seeing Indra is very bad because for his own sense gratification, to protect his position, to protect his power, he has actually resorted to killing his own sons, her sons. And the problem is that she cannot see any fault in her sons. Actually, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were the great demons. They were actually terrorists. You know, I mean, today's terms, you can call them terrorists. And they were universal terrorists, operating throughout the world and universe, actually, even beyond this earthly planet. But Diti could not see a single fault in her children, seeing my children are so wonderful. And Indra has actually killed them. So this is the problem when actually we are blind to the principle of Krishna consciousness. When we do not understand that our problems in life, the situations which occur in our lives is because of our own karma. You know, many times people, they become very upset. Oh, you know, why did this happen to me? You know, why did this bad thing happen to me? Why I didn't get admission into this thing? Or why did I, you know, why did this accident take place? Or something like that. And people keep blaming. Just like when I was in one preaching program, there was one person who used to attend. He used to come for my program. And he was quite an aged person. He was around 50. And he had a young son who had died in a car accident or a motorbike accident in America. So he was just 26, and because he loved his son so much, he became very, very terribly upset. And he thought, we worship God, we worship Krishna, and how could this happen? How could the Lord do this to me? He was so upset that he went to the point of building a wall in front of his altar. He constructed a wall, and he sealed the altar. He said, no more God. Everything is, you know, useless. God doesn't exist. So why did he do this? People get a lot, very upset actually when things don't go their way. And here we can see the similar situation. So they blame circumstance, they blame God, isn't it? And also to fuel this conception, we see also in the movies, you know, film stars, very famous film stars, they go to the temple and then they ring the bell. And they say something, "Kahan hai Bhagwan?" Something like, "Kidhar hai tumhara nyay?" And people say, oh, that's a good dialogue. We'll also adopt that same strategy. You know, people, they get, they get influenced by such kind of philosophy. But we must understand that God is present. And if this thing has happened to us, then why it has happened? Is God cruel to us? And if it is happening to me, why it's not happening to the other person? Why just me? People say, why me? Out of all the people here, why this happened to me? Why not his son? So the thing is, they don't understand that there is a very subtle law of karma. When you accept the law of karma, the blame does not shift, does not go outside, but comes back to us. Because in this world, we are just reaping the results of our own action. And life is a continuous stream. It's an unending, continuous process. It's only the body that changes. And the soul just passes from one body to another. And we are paying the price for our actions in this life and in the past. So, there is no one to be blamed but ourselves. When you accept this principle of karma, which is mentioned in the Shastras, then actually, life becomes peaceful. And then one will begin to work to rectify our own consciousness and secure a better destination. Otherwise, we continuously keep blaming everyone else, the situation and people and everything, and we never make any tangible progress. So the very wonderful aspect of Krishna consciousness is that we are given this wonderful philosophy of karma, which is actually God's laws, and not to accept karma is actually atheism. So here Diti, because of her affection for her own children, she becomes blind to this fact, and she seeks revenge. She's putting the blame. This is called the blame game. Not me, that person. He's responsible. So we have to understand this. Just like if a stone now just suddenly it just breaks a window and comes inside. You won't just take the stone and you say, why did you do this to me? Why did you disturb the class? No, the stone is not responsible. You should find out who is the person who threw the stone. Isn't it? So people who are actually causing us harm, apparently causing us harm, is actually nothing but an instrument for us to get back our own karma. So putting the blame on this person or this person, is actually not a very intelligent thing to do, because he's not responsible. He's just acted as an instrument to give back our own karma. So when one realizes this, one actually stops blaming people, situations, and one stops changing situations and people around them. Because if you see, if you change situations and you change the people around you also, you'll, in the changed situation also, you'll find the same kind of people, the same kind of situations everywhere you go. You may think, oh, this is not a very good place. I'll go to America probably. Like I was preaching to one person and in one college, and he graduated, he went to abroad, America. And there he met with an accident while crossing the road and he died. Why? Because karma follows you. It's not that when you go into this part of the world, you're going to be rescued. The karma is everywhere. The law of karma is like that. And the example is given, just like if there is a calf and there are thousands of cows, the calf will somehow or another find its mother. So no matter where you go to escape, you cannot. It will follow us. That is the law of nature. It's all pervading. So Diti is very very disgusted, and she's feeling very upset about it. And she's having sleepless nights. She's thinking, when will I get a peaceful night's sleep after killing Indra? So that's the nature of envy, it is explained. Nature of envy is like an acid, it is said. It's like when you keep acid, you keep it in a vessel. The very vessel in which the acid is kept, it destroys that vessel. That's the nature of envy. When you have hatred towards people, the only person who suffers most is that person, more than the other. You know, there was a very famous politician, and he was known for his very friendly attitude. Even to his opposition, the party who would be opposing his party, he would speak very nicely. He would speak very friendly, in a very friendly way he would deal with them. So once he was asked that, how is that, you know, you are so friendly, why do you speak so politely to your enemies? You should be actually killing them. So this person, a very famous politician, he says, actually, that's what I'm doing. I'm killing them. By speaking to them politely and in a very friendly way, they become my friends. And that's the best way to kill my enemies. Isn't it? The best way to kill your enemies is actually to befriend them. So the Vedic literature says that there are three kinds of people. One is the innocent, one is the envious, and the third is the devotees. So devotees must see that when there are other devotees, one must make friends with them. And those who are innocent, one should preach to them. And those who are envious, one should try to avoid them if it is not possible to preach to them or try to give them the message of Krishna consciousness. These are the three kinds of people. We must try to deal with them differently. So here, Diti is now in a very difficult predicament. She's in a very vengeful attitude. So she thinks the best way to fulfill my desire is to serve my husband, because my husband is very powerful. So it is explained in the Bhagavad that it said, a husband is a supreme demigod for a woman. The supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruit workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. So following this principle, a very sacred principle, that how a wife must be chaste to her husband and should serve her husband very wonderfully, she begins to serve her husband Kashyap. So she starts rendering wonderful services in a very humble and menial way, always ready to offer all the utilities that he wanted. And she was so obliging in her attitude, so wonderfully she served Kashyap, that Kashyap became very, very pleased with her. And Kashyap asked her that, what is it that you need? That I am so pleased with you that you must ask me for a benediction. So here it is explained that Kashyap became a little fascinated by the services and by the wonderful looks and beauty of his wife. And surrendering to her, he tells her that you please ask for a benediction. So then Diti replies to him, O great soul, I have now lost my sons. If you want to give me a benediction, I ask you for an immortal son who can kill Indra. I pray for this because Indra, with the help of Vishnu, has killed my two sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So Kashyap was so happy, he was so jubilant by the wonderful service of Diti. She was so pleased. But when he hears this request from his wife, his jubilation turns into lamentation. This is the nature of material life. One day we are happy, another day we are miserable. Isn't it? So that was the state of affairs of Kashyap. He was lamenting. So Kashyap now, he speaks a very wonderful verse. He says, to satisfy their own interest, materialists deal with others as if they were most dear to them. But no one is actually dear to them. Materialists may be supposed to be very saintly, but for their own interest, they can kill even their husbands, wives, sons, or brothers, or cause them to be killed by others. This is the nature of a materialist. What is a materialist? A materialist is a person who has ulterior motives. They want something for themselves, who are not devotees of the Lord. So he says in the Nectar of Instruction, there is a verse, Atyahara prayasascha prajalpunyam agraha janasangascha lolyamcha shadbir bhakti vinashyati. That there are six principles which are detrimental to devotional service. And one of the things he says is niyam agraha. There is one thing which is detrimental to devotional service. Just like we see, Diti was worshipping her husband. She was serving her husband, but she had ulterior motives. She wanted something for herself. So also, when sometimes devotees come to the Krishna conscious movement and when we are serving the Lord, when we hear so much that our service must be free from ulterior motivations. All that we desire should be service and nothing else from the Lord. And if we have any ulterior motives, that is not pure devotional service. It is detrimental to our making progress in Krishna consciousness. So we must always check our motivations. Because if our motivations are not pure, Krishna is not pleased by it. Just like, you know, it is explained, there are four levels of worshipping God. The first level is out of fear. Second is out of duty. Third is out of material desires. And lastly, out of love. So, you know, just like if there's a small, you might have seen it at home, generally sometimes children, you know, the mother may tell the child, you know, son, why didn't you have your dinner? And the child will say, no, no, I'm not going to have my dinner. So, why, my son, why are you not having a dinner? And the son will say, no, no, I'll wait for my father to come and then I will have my dinner. And then the mother thinks, amazing, really. So the father comes in the evening, and mother tells the father, you know, our son has not eaten the food. Father says, really? Why have we not eaten the food? So the son says, no, I was waiting for you to come. Oh, really? So then the father quickly goes, and you know, he washes his hands and feet, and he changes his dress, and he comes and sits on the dining table. And then the mother says, okay, now your father has come, so now you eat. And the son says something like, no, no, no. Now also I will not eat. He says, well, now why are you not eating? Your father's here. And the son says, no, no, I will first feed my father and then I will eat. And the mother and father are thinking, amazing. You know, how much love. And then the father says, all right. And then the son takes a little food and puts it in the father's mouth. And then the father takes some food, puts it in the son's mouth. And then the both are happy. Isn't it? We have seen that kind of... So when the son asks the father, father, give me a cycle. Father, give me a skateboard. Father, give me a this. Father, give me that. Father, give me an MP3 player. Give me a jukebox. The father may be pretty happy to give these things. I mean, he may say, okay, my son, I love him. I love him very much. And if he has his needs, I'll give him. But when will... Now, if the son says, father, I don't want anything from you. All I want to know is, how can I serve you? And the father will say, really? I mean, what do you want? And the son will say, no, 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 father. All I want is to serve you. And the father will say, no, no, beta, what do you want? You tell me. And the son will say, all I want to know is, I'm tired of asking you. Now I want to know how I can serve you. When the father becomes completely convinced that now my son has become very responsible and now he has grown up, now he wants to actually render service to me, at that point of time, tears will come in the father's eyes. Isn't it? We've seen that. So also when we see that when we are serving a Supreme Father, Krishna says, Pitaham asya jagato mata dhata pitamaha vedyam pavitram omkar. Krishna says, I am the father of the whole world. Our original father. And when we are serving him, when we keep motivations. Since so many births, we have gone to Krishna and says, Krishna, give me this, you know, Krishna, give me that, give me a good result, give me a good, you know, this and that. We have constantly been asking. So now is the time when we should tell the Lord that, please, how can I serve you? And this is what actually truly pleases the Lord. So therefore it is said in the Vedic literatures that when one serves the Lord, when one comes to God, one should not expect anything in return. One should serve without motivations. And because it's pretty disgusting, we can see that in an ordinary family, Diti is serving her husband, Kashyap, and she's having ulterior motives and her husband is not pleased. When ulterior motives are there, no one is pleased. That service becomes condemnable. So similarly, also devotional service, when it is tinged with material motivations, it becomes very condemnable. So therefore, one has to be very careful. Just like I was telling the other day, once I was speaking to one person who had come for the first time, and he was asking me many questions about Krishna consciousness and about ISKCON and centers abroad. And I was explaining to him the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And at the end of the discussion, he's telling me, "Arey, dekho, aapka center har jagah hai, dunya bhar mein hai. Kya aap mujhe America bhej sakte hain?" So I was thinking, my God, I spent 1 hour trying to preach to you the importance of Krishna consciousness. But, you know, people come with different kind of motives, isn't it? So it's when you hear that someone is having motivations, it's not very, you know, palliative. So it's not very inspiring, actually, to the Lord also. One may make advancement, there's no doubt, actually. It is said that even if you have any desires, one should come to Krishna. The father is not displeased if you have to ask him something. But he will be more pleased when you actually want to give him something. Just like, you know, there was once Aarti, which had come out from the altar and it was going around the people. So everyone was taking the Aarti and putting it on the head. So there was one visitor who came and he was doing the Aarti. And then he was doing like this. So he was doing the aarti, and then he was rubbing his knees. So one devotee happened to be there, and he said, "Hello, excuse me, what are you doing?" He says, "Tera ghutne mein dard ho raha hai." "I'm warming my knees." So one of the devotees told me that, you know, that we may even use the facilities of Krishna consciousness for satisfying our personal needs. So one has to be careful. So therefore it is explained in the Vedic literatures that after we hear so much that one must not maintain material desires, one must be careful to give it up. It is an offense to maintain material desires when we are practicing Krishna consciousness. So here we see that there is so much of enmity between the family members, you know, co-wives fighting, brothers fighting for property, for this and that. This is a typical materialistic family life, where one's own selfish interests take the priority. Wherever there is selfish interest, there will always be some kind of an argument, some kind of a disharmony. Therefore, if you see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that you must fight this battle. And Arjuna says, "How can I fight?" And he says, one of the reasons being, "How can I kill my own family members? It's so difficult for me. My teachers, my Bhishma, who are just like my father, my teachers, my friends, all are on the other side." And Krishna consciousness is not easy sometimes, because as you can see, you know, Arjuna was told what? He was told to give up his attachment to his family if it comes on the path of following religious principles. So it sometimes is very difficult. So Krishna, through this whole Gita, through the whole Mahabharata, actually wanted to establish this very important principle that one should keep our spiritual relationships as a priority to our material relationships. Because many times we identify with people on the basis of our bodily connections, blood relationships. "Oh, he's my brother, he's my son, or he's my uncle, he's my auntie." You know, we always see like that. And no matter how bad, like for example, we've seen that sometimes these children are, you know, horrible. They're drug addicts, they're alcoholics, and, you know, so many problems. But still the mother will always love the son. "Oh, mera beta itna achcha hai, no problem." And we can see this. That Diti, her two sons were terrorists, and all she could see is how nice they were. And Indra, who killed them because by taking help of Vishnu, was so bad. So here we understand that material relationships are of no consequence. Spiritual relationships is ultimately what is of value. Because we are not material bodies, we are these spiritual entities. And our relationship is only with Krishna, and in that sense, relationship is there with everyone else. Krishna is the father, and everyone else is his children. So therefore, in that way, we are connected to everyone. And only spirituality, it is said, only bhakti, devotion, is a needle which can actually stitch the whole world together. Many times people say, "Hindu, Chini, Bhai, Bhai." Or they say, "India, Pakistan, Bhai, Bhai." Sometimes they say that. But how can there be a Bhai, Bhai if there is no father? When can you be brothers when there is a father? But they don't accept the father. Then how can there be brotherhood? So actually, this is the true relationship. Sometimes a devotee may be doing far more greater service. Many times devotees experience that. When they come to the association of devotees, devotees do far more to them than their own relatives. Many times relatives cheat for property, and, you know, they take away all these things. They come down to basics. You know, what is it? What is in it for me? And when it comes to money, all the relationships are just like one devotee was telling that he was in the beach that day, in the Chaupati beach, chanting his rounds, and a man came there, and along with him there were all other people. And they were all serving him with great love and affection, and this devotee was saying, "Amazing, you know, how much love and affection is there." So they went, and the next day again he came to stand there, and again he found that those same people came, that old man sat on the chair, and all the other people, youngsters, were there serving the person. And he thought, the devotee thought that, you know, I should ask him, what is his, who is he and who are these other people? So he asked, who are you and what are these people? He said, oh, they are my children. They have come from England and all the different places. I said, oh, very wonderful. Then after some time, he asked the children that, how much love you have for your father? And it's so amazing to see that. It's so rare to find that, have so much love. So he said, actually, our father is a very rich man. And very soon, I think he's going to this thing. So we have come to, so that at least he writes some part of the property in my name, something like that. So he came to know that, the devotee came to know, okay, my God, what is this material relationships? Many times material relationships can be very selfish. So true relationships is based on service. That is what it is. So here, Kashyap Muni, he then quotes a verse. He says, Sharad Padma Utsavam Vaktram Vachascha Shravanamritam Hridayam Shuradharabam Srinam Koveda Cheshtitam. So Kashyap, it is explained that he was very much fascinated by the beauty of Diti and by the sweet talks of Diti, that he actually succumbed and he told his wife, okay, what do you want? So now he's quoting this verse, he's lamenting, and he says, Sharad Padma Utsavam Vaktram, that the face is so beautiful, just like a blossoming of lotuses in spring. And vachascha shravanamritam, and the sweet talk is like nectar to my ear. How wonderful. But he says, hridayam shuradharabam, but the heart is like a sword, as sharp as a sword. My God, how unfortunate that I put faith. So therefore, here is a very important message. That what is important is not what is external. Today's world is so much on, how a person looks, how a person talks, and so many other things. Many times we see ad, looks matter. Come to us, and we'll help you get a job. And everything today is about how to, make up your externals. But here it is explained that how, it's not the external what is important, it's the internal. And he gives the example of a sword. If you have a sword kept in a sheath, and the sheath is very well decorated with ivory and diamonds and jewels and everything. But actually, what is important is what is inside. What is inside is a very sharp razor. It's a weapon. You have to be careful. Or just like these days, if you find tiffin boxes. harmless looking tiffin box, like in Surat and, finding tiffin boxes, but what is inside is not lunch. It's a bomb. And what is inside is what is important. Yeah. Therefore, many times when people are getting their tiffin boxes, our security people say, not allowed. Isn't it? What is important? Is it outside or what is inside is important? What is inside is what is important. So therefore, in Krishna consciousness, we must learn to see not the externals, but actually the internals, the motivations. Externals are important, but they are secondary. So therefore, it is explained that one who puts faith on the externals is like, it's like walking on a path which is on a, and there is a hole in the ground and it is covered by grass. If you just put faith on externals, then you may get trapped. Externals may look like the ground is looking very wonderful. It's looking like a wonderful green pasture. But if you're not careful, then you may fall into the ditch. And we find that there is so much a problem these days. Because of advertisements, all advertising the externals. Wonderful people, good-looking people, and all those wonderful advertisements, making people put more and more, becoming more conscious of the externals and avoiding the internals, basically, avoiding developing the character. So it's a big facade, actually. One has to be careful. And moreover, when you see these, this Bollywood and Hollywood and all these things are full of what? It is all appreciation of the mundane beauty of the body. But actually, everything is flickering. So therefore, the real knowledge is not to see the externals, but to see the internal. So Krishna says in the Gita, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapakeja Pandita Samadarshina. So there are so many institutes giving education. But Krishna says the real education is what? Vidya Vinaya Sampanne. that when you get vidya, what naturally should follow is vinayam. That means humility. If there is no humility, there cannot be real education. One should not become more arrogant after education. One should become more humble. But where do we find this quality? There are more and more people who are passing out and they're becoming more and more proud. There's no question of humility. If you're humble, you think something wrong with you. You're lacking confidence. You should be arrogant, and that is considered as a great quality. And people respect you for that. But actually, here it is said, vidya vinaya sampanne. Means if you have vidya, immediately what comes is humility. And Brahmani Gavi Hasini, it is said that you learn to see people on the spiritual platform. You learn to see the spirit. You learn to get education that people are not their bodies. People are actually the spirit soul. And what matters is the consciousness. So therefore, in the Bhagavatam, there is an episode of Samudra Manthan. We find that the demigods and the demons are churning the ocean, and various gifts come out, various articles come out from the ocean. And finally, the first thing that comes out is halahal, the poison that comes out. And the Lord himself is present with the demigods and the demons as Lord Ajita. And he guides the demons to Lord Shiva for protection. Because that poison had no antidote. And it was spreading throughout the universe. Just like some, you know, Bhopal gas tragedy. The gas exploded and was spreading all over and killed people. So like that, the poison was spreading and it was killing people. And there was no antidote for that poison. There was only one person, that was Lord Shiva, which Lord directed them. So it is explained, the question is, why did, when the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna is personally present, why did he lead the demons and the demigods to Shiva? It is explained that many times Lord Shiva is misunderstood by people. If you see Lord Shiva, like when Bhrigu, he was going to test who is the Supreme Lord. He first went to Brahma, and Brahma saw him, and Bhrigu disrespected him by not offering him respects. Brahma was his father. So Brahma became very angry. So he went, he thought he is not supreme. He has not got his anger under control. So he went to Shiva. Shiva was his brother. So as soon as Shiva got up from his seat to embrace him, Bhrigu said, no, don't touch me, because you are covered with all ashes from the graveyard and you got all snakes around you. You are untouchable. So don't come close to me. And he offended him. So that is how Shiva dresses. He's a Param Vaishnav, but he's having all ash of the dead bodies moving around in cemeteries with ghosts, hobgoblins. He's called as Bhutnath. Bhutnath. He's the lord of the Bhutas. People are very afraid of Bhuts. You know, I mean, very recently there were some incidences of people, you know, some visitors in a temple, some ghost attacked them in the middle of the night. And at 1 o'clock in the night, they're screaming. And the whole temple woke up. I mean, all the brahmacharis and everyone woke up and trying to find out what happened. Some ghost attacked, it seems. So what to speak of Bhutnath, who's wandering around with all bhutas around him and having all serpents around him. Once we were having a lecture in Vrindavan, and Radhana Swami Maharaj is giving a lecture about how one should be fearless, and Krishna consciousness renders fearlessness, and all of a sudden one snake crept inside the assembly of devotees and everyone jumped up. One small snake, and there are our 2,000 people, everyone got frightened. So here is Lord Shiva moving around with all snakes around his body, around his neck. So naturally people may misunderstand. Because generally you don't find devotees dressed up like that. You find devotees dressed up with tilak, dhoti kurta, kanti mala. But here you see the Param Vaishnav dressed up in such garments. And people actually many times criticize. But the Lord, and moreover his duty, Lord Shiva's duty, as you know, the guna avataras. There are three guna avataras, Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. Brahma creates, Vishnu maintains and Shiva destroys. So his service is to only destroy. So many times people may misunderstand, Baba, he's like, you know, always destroyer. He's a terminator. Terminator. Thoda dur rao. But the law, and actually maintenance is actually with Vishnu. But the first time he took them to Lord Shiva. Why? Actually, they explain to reveal what is Shiva's true glory. And when Shiva was approached for help, Shiva spoke a verse. He said, Pranai sve pranina panti sadhava shana bhangurai. Baddha vereshu bhuteshu muhiteshu atma maya. So he says, Pranai sve pranina panti. That those who are sadhus, they sacrifice their own life for the sake of others, to render service to others. Pranai sve pranina panti sadhava shana bhangurai. Because sadhus know that this life is temporary, it's of no consequence. No matter how much you take care of your body, one day it is going to be destroyed. Sadhava shana bhangure. They know that this body is shana bhangur. It's temporary. Baddha vereshu bhuteshu, and the conditioned souls, not knowing this fact, they're covered by the illusory energy of the Lord. They're always engaged in fighting between each other and arguing with each other. So when he spoke this verse to Parvati and he accepted this duty of drinking poison, and he drank the whole poison himself and he protected the universe. So generally Lord Shiva, he destroys the universe, but here he's protecting the universe. Why? Because Lord Vishnu wanted to reveal his true character. So what is important is not what is outside, but our motivations when we do something. In the when we go to Mayapur, there is a place called as Simant Dweep. And there is the wonderful deities of Jagannath, Baldev, Subhadra. It is very interesting to note that what is the pastime of the deities there. There was a contemporary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu whose name was Jagdish Ganguly. And he used to always, on a yearly basis, go and visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Orissa, Jagannath Puri. So it was a long walk, but he became old. He was very old and he lost his eyesight. So he couldn't go anymore. So, you know, he started requesting the devotees to take him along with them. But they said that he's become so old now. You have become so old, so you should now stay here and you should take rest, because anything may happen. You're an old man. It's very dangerous and risky path. So this Jagdish Ganguly, he was such a great devotee of the Lord. He was such a great devotee that he was lamenting and feeling very morose. So at that time, the Lord appeared in his dream and told him that tomorrow when you go to take a bath, a log of wood will hit you on the head and that will give back your eyesight. And then you must go and find a carpenter who is living so and so place, and he will carve out my deities out of that wood. So the Jagdish Ganguly, he goes to take a bath next day and in the Ganga, and it happens. A log of wood comes, hits his head, gets his eyesight back. And he goes in search of that carpenter. And when he finds that carpenter, that person was having leprosy. The carpenter was having leprosy. But nevertheless, he brings him and he says that you should do this work. You should carve out the Lord Jagannath's figure in that wood. So he was doing that work. And while he was doing the carpentry work of Jagannath, all his wounds were bleeding. All pus was coming out from the wounds. And finally, when he finished, he became completely cured of that disease. Became completely cured. And today we see that deities are still there in Simant Dweep. And very, very powerful and very, very dynamic deities. A lot of leelas take place there. So we see that the Lord agrees for being carved by a leper. Because what the Lord sees is not the externals, it's the internals. Why? Because he sees the soul and not the body. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once, he was coming to meet Sanatana Goswami, and Sanatana Goswami was having a disease on his body. He was having all pus and wounds, and all his pus was coming from his body. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go and embrace him. And Sanatana Goswami would feel so embarrassed that he would say, please, you don't embrace me. All the pus is contaminating your transcendental body. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would say, no, this pus which is coming out from your body is like chatushma. It is like the mixture of sandalwood paste and a guru and all those wonderful items, camphor. He says, you're just like my son. And just like a mother when she carries a son and the small child passes, you know, a stool, the mother doesn't feel any embarrassment. If she feels nice, it's like chatushma for her. It's like sandalwood paste. Very fragrant. And you can see that, isn't it? Others may feel, you know, oof, And we give out, you know, past, you know, we give it back to the mother. But the mother feels it's great bliss. Why? Because there is love. So love transcends externals. Like I was once in one hospital, and I was in, going to get some report of some devotee. I was sitting down there, and in my opposite, I was seeing on the table, there was one lady, she was carrying her son, a small child. And that child, there was something wrong with the child, that she was having some defect, birth defect or something. So I looked at the face of the child. The face was not very, it was distorted face. And he was not even behaving properly. Something was wrong. So the doctor came out and asked the doctor, what is wrong with that child? And the doctor said that this is some birth defect. The child has no brain and some problem is there. And it won't be living for long. And then I looked at the child and I looked at the mother. But the mother with so much of compassion and love was, you know, kissing the child and caressing the child. And I was looking at the face and I was thinking, wow, I got a message that what, when there is true, when there is love and there is affection, one does not see the externals. So also when one develops devotion for God, one actually transcends the bodily platform. One actually learns to see the spirit. And the Lord, because he's having a spiritual vision, he does not see the externals. He does not see the body, he sees the soul. So here we can see a very wonderful pastime, this quality emanating from this pastime of how one should not see the external, one should see the internal. So Kashyap, he feels cheated. He feels that my wife has cheated me. So I must do something now to cheat her. Now you may say, now he's a great devotee, how he can cheat? Prabhupada said, it's not that devotees don't cheat. But when they cheat for a great purpose. What is the purpose? It is important. Like recently I was in a, I met the director general of a very good MBA institute. And I went to him and I said, sir, we want some facilities in your hostel because we want to preach there. And so he said, no, this is all not good. You know, I don't believe in giving lollipops to people. If you want to inspire people by your philosophy, you convince them intellectually. You teach them, and if they're intelligent, they will take it, and that's the way it is. That's how you should preach. What is this giving lollipops to people and making all these facilities for them and all? If they were interested, they will come, otherwise forget it. He was not in a position to hear, but actually, you can understand that where are intelligent people these days? Are there, I mean, how many people are actually interested in Krishna consciousness? No. Just like the mother, sometimes she says to the child, you know, take the medicine. And the child will say, I don't want medicine. And then the mother will say, here's a lollipop. And says, okay, give me medicine. That's how it works. So generally people are, as Bhagavat puts it, mand sumand matayo mand bhage upadruta. That in the age of Kali Yuga, people are not very intelligent. Sometimes devotees may have to cheat in order to give the message to the people. It's called as indirect preaching. Just like Jayadeva Swami Maharaj, he gives a wonderful example. Sometimes the mother is feeding the child and she says, here is a kheer, eat. And the child will not open his mouth. No, I don't want. And then the mother will say, see this aircraft. It's coming, it's flying. And the child will say, and then it comes inside the mouth. He opens his mouth and goes inside the mouth. Isn't it? So sometimes you may have to, you know, do that. You may have to give certain kind of facilities for people and tell them, you know, this and that. And we have to attract. And so here Kashyap is thinking, Diti wants to kill Indra, but I should give her a process by which she will become purified of her mentality and somehow take up to Krishna consciousness. So we can see that sometimes, you know, we distribute free prasad. That is also one of the reasons, because many times people are not interested in philosophy. Like there was a devotee whom I asked, I just interviewed him, he was a brahmachari, that, you know, what attracted you most in Krishna consciousness? So he said that when he was in college, some devotees came and started giving a lecture. I attended one program and I never came to the program again. After one year again I came back, some people called me for a program. So when they told me about the program, he said that All I could remember about ISKCON was the prasad. These people give good prasad, so I think I should go. Something I can gain. The person who gave the lecture was one of the best speakers from a temple. But all people could understand or could remember was prasad. So sometimes this is required. Sometimes we may give because it's Krishna ultimately. We are giving Krishna in the form of prasad. Just like, there is in our IYS youth meet, we were discussing the glory of prasad. There is a jail, Agrahar Jail, Prapanna Agrahar Jail in Bangalore. There are 4,700 inmates, people who are imprisoned in that jail. Now you may say, what's so special about that jail? Speciality is that it's overcrowded, it's double its capacity. People are reluctant, the criminals are reluctant to leave the jail. Why? Because ISKCON is responsible for distributing prasad in that jail. So one person called as Reddy, he was interviewed. He was a criminal. He was interviewed that what happened? Why are you what inspires you to stay here and continue? He said, we get wonderful prasad 3 times in a day. Why we should go out and perform sinful activities? We'll be here only. So it helps, if people are attracted, if people are liking it, why not? If people don't want to hear philosophy directly, then we have to give them here and there and somehow keep them in Krishna consciousness. So this is a very important principle. So we must not learn to, the idea is that we must not learn to put faith simply or by putting faith on externals, seeing externals. It's very dangerous. Like Kashyap did to Diti. There are other instances also when Dasharath, when he came to the palace, he found Kaikeyi in her room lamenting. He says, what happened? Why are you lamenting? And she said, I'm very upset with you. And then Dasharatha said, what is upsetting you? What is there in this world that I can't give you? You just ask and I will fulfill all your desires. So she says, are you sure? Says, yes. Oh, my beautiful wife, please tell me what you want. And she says, I want you to banish Ram and install my son Bharat as the king. So sometimes appearance can be deceptive. We should not put complete faith without having full trust as to that person's motivations. Therefore, we must always trust devotees. It is explained that the devotee has all good qualities. What is that verse? Mano rathe na sati dhavato. How does it begin? Yasyasti bhakti bhagavati akinchana sarvair gune tatra samasate suraha harav abhaktasya kuta mahat guna mano rate nasato dhavato bhai. That a person who is a devotee has got all the good qualities. Person who is not a devotee, who is not aspiring to clean his heart, he is riding on the chariot of his mind. And the mind will take him all different places. Sometimes he may be good, but sometimes he may not be good. When his interests are hurt, When his sense gratification is affected, then immediately he will show his true colors. So it is a very important lesson that we learn here. We learn from this thing. So then he tells Diti that you should follow this vow. For 1 year you follow and your desire will be fulfilled. What is that vow? So he says, do not be violent or cause harm to anyone. Do not curse anyone and do not speak lies. Do not cut your nails and hair, and do not touch impure things like skulls and bones. Never enter the water while bathing. Never be angry. And do not even speak or associate with wicked people. Never eat leftover food. Never eat prasad offered to the goddess Kali, and do not eat anything contaminated by flesh or fish. After eating, you should not go out to the street without having washed your mouth, hands and feet. You should not go out in the evening or with your hair loose, nor should you go out unless you are properly decorated with ornaments. Putting on washed clothes, being always pure and being adorned with turmeric, sandalwood pulp and other auspicious items. Before breakfast, one should worship the cows, the Brahmanas, the goddess of fortune, and the supreme personality of Godhead. So there are various other things which Kashyap tells Diti. There is no time to discuss all those things. But the most importantly is that she should worship the Brahmanas, the cows, the goddess of fortune, the supreme personality of Godhead. So what he effectively gave her was the Vaishnava principles, the sadhana bhakti, principles of sadhana bhakti, the pumsavahan vrat that she followed, and by which he expected that she will be purified. So what happens? The first thing he told her was, do not be violent or cause harm to anyone. So in Krishna consciousness, it is very important that one should not be envious of anyone. One cannot make progress in Krishna consciousness if one is envious. Therefore, in the 16th chapter, 3rd verse, it is explained, Tejas shama dhriti shaucham adrohaniti manita bhavanti sampadam devim abhijatasya bharata. That to be non-envious is a quality of demigods. One must learn to be non-envious. One should always glorify devotees. One should always be good and appreciate devotees. If there is something negative, we have to think twice. Many times, in fact. In fact, there was a great philosopher, a spiritualist. And he was approached by one of his friends. And he told him, hey, you know what? I want to tell you this thing about this friend of yours. So immediately this person, his name was Socrates. Socrates, we've heard of Socrates. He was a spiritualist. He believed in his soul. So he said, wait a minute. Before you say what you have to say, let us apply these three filters. I want to ask you three questions. The three filters of truth, goodness, and benefit. The first thing is, what you're going to say, is it truthful? So this person says, well, I'm not very sure, but alright, then second, let us apply the second filter. What you're going to say, is it good about that person? She says, no, it is not good. In fact, it is, you know, something. Alright, let us apply the third filter. What you're going to say, is it beneficial to me? She says, no. In fact, it is just the opposite. So then why you have to say it? Don't say it. So therefore, when we hear something about any devotee, if it is something positive, we should be keenly and attentively, we should hear. We should be very eager to glorify them. And we should try to apply these three principles. Is it truthful? Is it beneficial? And is it good? Then only we must speak. Because the tendency of human nature is that to be envious and we always criticize. Basically gossiping. And a foul atmosphere gets created by which no one is inspired in Krishna consciousness. So Vaishnava means to glorify devotees for their services and their contributions. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam begins with this verse. The first canto, first verse, second, first canto, first chapter, second verse goes like this. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmat saranam satam. That Srimad Bhagavatam is for those people. Devotional life can be understood by those people who are nirmatsar, who are non-envious. So Indra is Diti's. So Indra thinks that now Diti is going to get a benediction from Kashyap. So Diti starts following properly all the Pumsavan Vrat very religiously. And there Indra becomes very upset. Because Indra is thinking that now very soon the child will be born and I will be in trouble. So he comes and he becomes an assistant of his stepmother, Diti, and starts serving her very wonderfully, rendering menial services. Now we can see that she had an ulterior motive, and now Indra is also having an ulterior motive for his service to her. So Indra's motivation was that he will find a fault with her practice. While she is doing her practices, he will see a fault. And the moment he sees a fault, he will enter into the womb of Diti and kill the child. That was his motivation. So he was looking for a fault. He could not find any fault. And he was becoming very distressed. So again we see here that motivation for work is very important. Here again he is ulteriorly motivated. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was visited by Raghunath Bhatt Goswami, Raghunath Bhatt Goswami had another assistant along with him. His name was Ramdas Vishwas. And Ramdas Vishwas, he was an impersonalist. He was a devotee of Lord Ram, but he was having impersonalistic tendencies. He wanted to merge in the form of the Lord. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received Raghunath Bhat, he didn't give any importance to Ramdas Vishwas. Why? Because the Lord knew that he had ulterior motives. His motivations was not pure. His motivation was not bhakti. He wanted to become God rather than serve God. So the Lord always sees the internals. So one day what happened, Diti makes a mistake while she was practicing the Vrat. And instead of, when she ate her food, she forgot to brush her teeth, wash her mouth, and she just slept without doing it. So taking this opportunity, Indra enters into the womb of Diti and with his thunderbolt, he cuts the child into 49 pieces. He cuts it into 7 pieces and then each piece he cuts into 7. So 7 into 7, 49 pieces. But while he was cutting the child, he sees a great miracle taking place. He found that the child was not dying. Children were not dying. Every time he cut the child, another child appeared. He was cutting the hand part became into another child. So like that there were 49 children in front of him. And he was amazed. Indra, he was having this powerful weapon, but his weapon could not kill the child. So again, he was bewildered. Indra was bewildered. Now it is explained in the Shastra that Indra also becomes bewildered many times when he is using his thunderbolt. Like there was a Namuchi, a demon, when he threw his thunderbolt at Namuchi, it hit the neck of Namuchi, but it didn't even create a scratch on his neck. So Indra became confused. How is it that, you know, my thunderbolt is so powerful that it didn't even scratch his neck? But actually Namuchi had received a benediction that he will not be killed by any weapon which is dry or wet. So then Indra made a weapon out of foam, and then he could kill him. So here is another bewilderment of Indra, where his thunderbolt could not kill a small child. So while he was killing, those children started screaming, you know, don't kill us, don't kill us. And they started crying. And Indra said, keep quiet, Maruta, Maruta, don't cry, don't cry. And he was cutting them into 49 pieces. So here we can see Indra's mentality. For his own purpose, selfish purposes, he was ready to kill a child. So here it is explained that he was saying, Maruta, Maruta, do not cry, do not cry. And the children's name became Marut. The 49 Marutas, they become the demigods. So this is it is explained in the Shastras that because Diti performed devotional service, all the children became immortal. They could not be killed. Because Diti performed her sadhana of devotional service, the Pumsavan Vrat, the child within her womb became deathless. So here there is a verse in the Bhagavad which says, if one worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, even once, he receives the benefit of being promoted to the spiritual world and possessing the same bodily features as Vishnu. Diti worshipped Lord Vishnu for almost 1 year, adhering to a great vow. Because of such strength in spiritual life, the 49 Maruts were born. How then is it wonderful that the Marutas, although born from the womb of Diti, became equal to the demigods by the mercy of the Supreme Lord? So this is truly a miracle, isn't it? That how the child could not be killed. So when Parikshit Maharaj was hearing this pastime, he became a little amazed. So Shukdev Goswami is telling him, it is not surprising that these children were protected by the Supreme Lord because of the mother's devotional service. Even you, Parikshit, were protected by the Supreme Lord in the womb of your mother. So the pastime is there, as we know, that Parikshit Maharaj, when he was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, Ashwatthama, it was just after the battlefield of Kurukshetra, had left a Brahmastra. And that Brahmastra was aimed at the womb of Uttara. Parikshit Maharaj was in the womb. And Uttara came to Krishna asking for help, that Krishna, you please protect my womb. And at that time, Krishna entered into the womb and protected him. So Parikshit Maharaj is saying that you are actually, Shukdev Goswami is telling Parikshit that you are protected by Krishna in the womb. So also it is possible by the Supreme Lord's grace that these children were protected. Many times people have this doubt, you know, that how is that devotional service, is it so powerful, that what I am practicing? Is it effective what I am doing? Can I receive benefit? Many times, devotees have even doubt that whether Krishna, he could be killed also, like we hear in the past time that the Lord, Supreme Lord Krishna, he was hit by the arrow of Jara. He was sitting under a tree and a hunter came with and shot the foot of the Lord and he was killed. So many times people ask that how is it that the Supreme Lord, when he is protecting all the people, how come can he be killed? Or did he leave a material body? So again, Shukdev Goswami Maharaj is actually telling that the Supreme Lord was hit by the arrow of our ordinary hunter, which is just a metal arrow. It was just a metal arrow. How can the Lord be affected by a metal arrow when the Lord protected you, dear Parikshit, in the womb of the mother from a great weapon like Brahmastra? And also if you see that here the Lord is protecting the Marutas from the Vajra of Indra. So can the Lord be affected by an ordinary hunter's arrow, a metal arrow? It's not possible. It's not possible. So it is a leela. The Lord had performed a leela. And therefore it is explained in the Shastras, in the Bhagavatam, that after the Lord performed his pastimes, there was great deal of dharma on the surface of the earth. As Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. That the Lord appears to establish dharma. And he established dharma, and there was dharma everywhere. But the problem was that there were great amount, the age was of Kali Yuga. According to the law, Kali comes after Dwapar Yuga. And there were great number of people who had to undergo the reactions for their sins. So in order to invite Kali to do its service on this planet, he performed a leela by which the people will be confused. And therefore Lord Krishna, he leaves behind a false material body so that people get sufficient reason to doubt Krishna's supremacy. Therefore Krishna says in the Gita, avajananti ma mudha manushim tanumashrita, that those who doubt whether I am the Supreme Lord or not, thinking that I have come in a human form, are actually mudas. And for such mudas, for such people of Kali, to give them sufficient reason not to have faith on Krishna, he does perform this leela, that an ordinary hunter comes and shoots an arrow and kills Krishna. Moreover, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes that is it possible that after the huge, you know, battlefield which took place, when the Yadu Vamshas are fighting with each other, there are around 500 crore people who are killed, the Yadu Vamshas who are at Prabhashetra. They were all killed there. There was a huge battlefield, so many soldiers dead, that a hunter is coming there to find a deer. Do you find a deer in a battlefield? There's so much of noise in the battlefield, so much of killing going on. You don't find a deer in the battlefield. So what is the hunter doing there? So it is understood that it is an arrangement of the Lord. And moreover, when Jara, he shoots the arrow, the subsequent verses describes that immediately Jara, realizing that it was Supreme Lord, he falls at his feet and begs for forgiveness. It doesn't explain that the Lord is telling Jara, you take out this arrow from my foot. No. It's explained, if it would have hit the foot of the Lord, the next verse would be describing Jara removing the arrow from the feet of Lord Krishna. But it doesn't explain like that. And in front of Jara, Lord Krishna tells Jara, the hunter, that it is nothing but my leela, don't worry, it is not your fault. And he sends Jara to the spiritual world. So he sends Jara to the spiritual world, and people have doubt that Krishna, whether he went to the spiritual world back or not. So Parikshit Maharaj is explaining that Krishna was in the Gurukul of Sandipani Muni. Sandipani Muni, after he graduated in 64 days, said, I want Guru Dakshina. So Krishna says, what Guru Dakshina can I give you? So he says, you two boys are supernatural boys. You all are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I am not going to ask you anything ordinary. I will ask you something very difficult. My dead son, I want him back. So Krishna immediately he goes to the place, he goes to the because he was drowned at in a river. So he goes to the ocean, in fact, and he goes under. He finds out there is a demon under the ocean called as Shankarchud. No, sorry, Panchajanya. And he goes in the bottom of the ocean and he kills this demon, and he still could not find the son of his guru. So he gets that conch, which Krishna has. Its name is Panchajanya. And then he goes to Yamaraj. He goes to the abode of death, abode of Yamaraj, Samyamani. And he meets Yamaraj and he says, "I want the son of my guru back." So immediately Yamaraj brings his son and he says, "You please take it." And he brings the guru of his, the son of his guru back. So we can see that Krishna brought the dead son of his guru back. And there are people who believe that Krishna was killed. What a paradox, you see. So this is nothing but an arrangement of the Lord in order to confuse the people so that those who want to continue in that illusion can get sufficient reason to do that. So what to speak of the Supreme Lord? Even his devotional service is so powerful that here we can see that the people were protected. All these children in the womb of the mother was protected. So here we can see, it is explained that, the only protector is the Lord. No one else. We may make all our arrangements for protection, but the Lord is the supreme protector. We can see that we can see so many practical incidents. Just like I was recently in Nair Hospital, and there was a doctor there, Shukdev Prabhu. He was telling me that there was one girl, a medical student. She became sick. On Tuesday she became sick, and on the next week she died. In 1 week she was dead. And the doctors all around her were trying their best to diagnose the disease, but they couldn't even diagnose the disease. They were all doctors. She was surrounded by doctors. So actually, if the Lord is not protecting, if the Lord doesn't protect us, then no one can protect us. There is a verse, Balasya Neha Sharanam Pitaro Narsingha. That if the child is destined to die, no amount of effort by the parents can protect the child. This is what it is. And, one boy was telling me in the recent article in the newspaper came that a boy met with an accident. He hit a truck. And it so happened that the rods were kept in the truck. This was, construction rods. The construction rod went through his stomach. So while he was still living, he called his parents and said that, I met with an accident, and on my verge of death, I just called you to say goodbye. And he still survived, and people came and they with the welding machine, they cut the rod. There was 5 feet rod in his body, took him to the hospital, and they removed the rod, and he still survived. So we can see that who is killed and who is protected is actually in the divine hands of the Supreme Lord. So here it is explained that the Supreme Lord protected the children of Diti because of her devotional service. So finally, Diti opens her eyes and she finds that her children, the Marutas, were along with Indra. And they were all friendly. Because Indra, when he saw that these children were actually not against him, they were his friends, so they became friendly. And he accepted him as the demigods. So when Diti woke up from her sleep, she found that her children were friendly with Indra, and she completely forgot about her envy. She completely forgot, and she revealed her heart. She told Indra that I was performing this yagya, this vrat, so that I get a child who can kill you. And she told Indra that what is the secret? Why are there 49? I just asked for one child, now there are 49? What is the secret behind this? So Indra says, actually, I was also having ulterior motives. Even I wanted to kill the children. So because of practicing devotional service, Diti's heart became completely purified. And even Indra, because he was assisting Diti, even he became purified. And therefore they came to a compromise. And they said, Vancha Kalpataru Bhascha Kripa Sindhu Bhascha. The devotees, sometimes when they have an argument, like someone was saying, some devotee was explaining that when he came to the first time to the association of devotees, he saw two devotees arguing like anything. He said, my God, devotees also fight? I will never come to the association of devotees again. But then after some time he saw that those two devotees were fighting, were embracing each other and they were taking dust each other. So it's not that devotees don't fight, but after the fighting, they actually patch up. You know, they forget about they don't keep, take it seriously. So both of them became, this is the power of devotional service. And I explained, just like when you keep a diamond, you know, a diamond is the hardest substance on earth. And if you keep a rose close to it, now rose is very soft. The diamond is extremely hard. But still, the color of the rose will enter into the diamond. So even though, no matter how contaminated we are, if we just take shelter of the association of devotees and devotional service, there is bound to be some change. No matter how hard, even as hard as a diamond, you know, still there will be some change. There's great hope. So Indra, he becomes friends of the Marutas, and he accepts Marutas as the demigods. So Indra speaks, also those who are interested only in worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they do not desire anything material from the Lord and do not want liberation, Krishna still fulfills their desires. So here we see that they were purified. They didn't expect this result, but still. So we can see that how the devotional process, the devotional service is so wonderful, that even though we do not expect certain things, but good results come up. And people get purified from all the contaminations. Like in Tirupati, there is a wonderful story I came across. In Tirupati, there is a place called Alipiri. And there is a custom in Tirupati that when you shave off your head there, you go and touch your feet to some sandals there. And how did the sandal come there? It is explained that there is a pastime which took place about a man who was a shoemaker. His name was Chinna. And the shoemaker, he had great bhakti for the Lord. So even though he was a low-born person, low caste, but still he had a great devotion for the Lord. So one day he thought that I should make slippers for the Lord. So he thought, but how will I understand what is the measurement of the Lord's feet? So he kept a cloth and he put rice on it and he prayed to the Lord that, oh Lord, please somehow or another just manifest your measurement here. And he started praying to the Lord out of devotion. When he prayed, the Lord manifested and created an impression on the rice. And with that, he made the slippers. And with great devotion, he worshipped those slippers. And he was going to Balaji to offer those slippers to the Lord. So while on that path, he met some caste-conscious, envious people who pushed him from that path and said, you cannot come to this path, this is contaminating. And while he was falling, he called out to the Lord for help. And the Lord came and, you know, protected him and said that I'm very pleased by your devotional service and I accept your offering. And he took the slippers, the Lord wore those slippers, and it is still, those slippers are kept there. And people, the yatris who come there, they offer their, you know, dandavats to that. So they offer their dandavats and respects to those slippers. So we can see that how devotional service is so powerful, even though there may be past conditionings and past anarthas, but there is great hope that it will be completely eradicated by the process of devotional service. And we can see that how Srila Prabhupada was actually demonstrated this aspect. No one before Srila Prabhupada had actually gone to the West and actually converted the Westerners to take up to Krishna consciousness. But actually Srila Prabhupada demonstrated the potency of devotional service by going to the West and preaching to those people who are very sinful, breaking regulative principles practically on a daily basis. And he made them great Vaishnavas. So we must have faith and take on to this process of Krishna consciousness. And as we know, the process is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. It is said, Harer Naam, Harer Naam, Harer Naam, Eva Kevalam. You know, three times it is mentioned. Harer Naam, Harer Naam, Harer Naam. It is explained why it is mentioned three times. Because in the age of Kali Yuga, people forget. So therefore, it has to be repeated 3 times. Like once I was in a class and I was giving a lecture and the mobile phone started ringing. So I said, please, can we switch off the mobile phones so that we don't get disturbed. So I made an announcement, and after the announcement, again, after around 10 minutes, another mobile phone rang. So again, I made an announcement that, please, can you switch off the mobile or put it in silent mode. After making second announcement, again, the mobile phone rang. Then I made a third announcement, can we switch off the mobile phone, can you put on the silent mode? And then mobile phones were all finished. There was no noise. So we have this, tendency, isn't it, including ourselves, that we don't remember or we forget. There was Shastra, I say 3 times, Harer Naam. If you've missed it, Harer Naam. Won't miss it. And again, if you miss it, Harer Naam, Eva Kevalam. And there's no other method. Don't go and search anywhere else. It's Harer Naam only. Kalau, Nasteva, 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 Gadiranya. There is only this process of chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So before I end, I would like to request Shamik Rishi Prabhu. We have a wonderful disciple of Srila Prabhupada here amongst us. So he would like to speak. I would like to invite him to speak a few words. The contamination which I have spread in your heart, it can be nullified by him. Hare Krishna. So please.
Next life, they will get harmed by others. So how do we understand it in that situation?
Okay. So that is there. Like some people who kill animals, there are people who say, look, everyone is getting back their own karma. So if you killed this animal, how could the animal die if it was not within his karma? Right? It was his karma to die, so he died. And you just acted as an instrument. Isn't it? So go ahead, just keep killing. So that is a logic which sometimes people use. But suppose there is an example. Suppose a person, there's a court, and the judge declares this criminal to be hanged till death. And this criminal is being taken to the gallows to be killed. And a person thinks, well, this person is anyway going to die. Why not I kill him? And he takes a gun and he shoots him. What do you think will happen? He will be sent to the gallows. Isn't it? Why? Because he has taken the law in his hands. So if people have to get back their karma, leave it up to them. We should not try to become agents of karma. Because we will get punished for sinfully desiring to kill someone. So therefore, we must try to, avoid harming others in any way possible. Let people suffer for their own karma. Let us not be instruments. Did you understand that? Yeah?
Thank you.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Okay, there's a question there. Question, and then after that, Prabhuji will speak.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. You said that Pakistan and India bye-bye, but there is no father. But I read one of the articles that they stated that India is Bharat Mata, but that means Pakistan is father for that. Instead of one step ahead, but we are in one step backward. Take for example in a film industry. And also several times we were defeated by Pakistan. Cricket. Please comment on this.
So that's what I was saying. When you go into space, do you see India? Do you see Pakistan? All you see is a mass of land. Those divisions have been made by us. If an Indian thinks that I am fighting Pakistan, if he dies on the battlefield, he'll be born in Pakistan next time. Then he'll be saying Pakistan, India, I should kill Indians. So these are all false designations, actually. It's all bodily designations. ultimately, when you go to the doctor, you don't say, I am an Indian, huh? Give me Indian medicine. I am a Pakistani, you should give me Pakistani medicine. Or I am a Hindu. No. So there are certain things which are beyond these designations. So we have to learn to transcend these problems. People are suffering only because of their irreligiosity. No one is responsible. Today if you see the Hindus are actually many times avoiding to fulfill their duties. Isn't it? Like certain person commented that there are many Muslims who know Hindu scriptures better than Hindus. So the thing is that it is not about so much about Hindu or they are all different paths. Paths to God. They may be of a different religion, but they're all different paths to God. We have to realize that. So we have to learn to respect and have tolerance for all other religions. And all other different, because they're basically living entities. Mamaivamshu jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. They're all souls. And unless we do not come to that platform, we will not be having respect for them. We will not be able to, we'll be envying others. So devotee never envies anyone. Does not make these bodily designations. Okay? Okay, one last question.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Prabhuji, in your speech you had once told that people who have drugs, are into these kind of abuses are bad people and we need to avoid such people or we should not show love towards such people. I think we need more compassion towards such people rather than avoiding them because they are people who are destroying themselves. They cannot be considered as, put into the category of terrorists or put into the category of murderers and, people who are destroying others. These are people who need more compassion so that they learn to love their own lives a lot more than what they are doing right now to destroy themselves. So I just wanted to tell this.
Yeah, that's what Prabhupada did, isn't it? When he went to the West, there were drug addicts. And, they would take drugs and they would, come to the satsangas. And Prabhupada preached to these people and made them devotees, isn't it? So our movement began from drug addicts. Prabhupada would say, hippies. And they have now become happies. So no one can say that ISKCON is not doing nothing for the drug addicts. The ISKCON was founded because of these people. Because those people who are not taking drugs were not accepting Krishna consciousness. So, sometimes you may find that those who are into addictions may be humble enough to accept your message. So humility is a very important criteria. And they, when they went, Prabhupada went to the West, they had great respect for Srila Prabhupada. But there are so many very pure people in India at that time who thought that, this we know, it's Hinduism. So what? We know it all. But there in the West, they had great respect for Srila Prabhupada. Anything that was spiritual from India, they had great respect. So they accepted it. And they all gave up smoking, gave up drinking, addictions. And now today we see that they are so advanced devotees that people cannot even imagine. And it's a great hope that if these people can become devotees, then there's hope for everyone. And that's why it is said that, someone told Prabhupada, this person is so fallen, he should be taken out of his court. Prabhupada said, our movement is for the fallen only. Our movement is for the fallen. Nityanand Prabhu made Jagai and Madai into devotees. Now, Jagai and Madai were the greatest terrorists. There was no sin that they had not performed on the surface of the planet. But they became devotees. So, Nityanand Prabhu was the Adi Guru who preached to drug addicts. That is compassion. So I don't think anyone can say that ISKCON devotees don't have compassion for drug addicts. No, I think we have to extend our mercy to them. But if they are envious, then I said that we should keep away. If they are envious and if they are trying to blaspheme you, then you must keep away from those. As I said, three kinds of people: the innocent, the devotees, and the envious. Envious, anyone can be envious. A drug addict may be envious. Or a very pious person, a very pure person can be envious. Envy may be in the heart of anyone. But a drug addict may be Very respectful. And if he's respectful, like there was one small boy, he was distributing Gita on the train. So there was a drunkard. So this small boy went, Gita lo, Gita. So this person was so envious, he was alcoholic, he was drunk. He hit the Gita and he dropped it on the floor. So this child, one of our Gopal's Garden children were telling me this. So he picked up the Bhagavad Gita and he told this man very innocently, aapko Gita chahiye to lo, nahi chahiye to kyun marta kyun hai aap? If you don't want, don't take. Why are you hitting it? This man became so affected. He immediately took out the money and he said, take money, and he purchased the Gita. And he purchased the Gita. So we may never know who's envious and who's not. So we have to extend our mercy to everyone. Krishna's mercy is for the most fallen, especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Dina Bandhu. So we have to do that. Okay? Okay, Hare Krishna. So, Prabhu, please, I can speak.